Welcome to Series 2 of the Social Care Podcast, Sharing Stories, with me, Audrey Moore, and David Bagnall, a.k.a. Baggy.
This podcast is for the benefit of anyone working in or studying social care. We like to chat with interesting people in the social care world and hear their stories.
Anyone who knows us will know that Baggy and I are very different in many ways. However, we share a number of common values, including respect and compassion for all, a love of working in social care, and a strong desire to elevate the profile of social care work, to have it recognised as the profession that it is. And we hope that this comes through in this series.
Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Morning. Good morning.
Firstly, would you like to introduce yourselves and let our listeners know a bit about yourselves?
Yes, no problem. I'm Nuala Flynn and I'm working in the HSC in the National Health and Social Care Professionals Office. My background is social care. I worked in residential and also in the community with a preventative role on it. I've over 30 years experience, and one of the things that I keep going back to is actually my social care training and experience, which keeps building.
Hi everybody, my name is Charlotte Burke. I'm the CPD coordinator with Social Care Ireland, which is the professional representative body for social care in Ireland. And my background is I started from my cert, I got a placement in college in the disability sector. And from that placement, I went on the relief panel and I ended up getting a job then maybe a year later. And I worked with that service for nearly 20 years. And then 2014, I think I went back and did a master's in Grange Gorman. And from that, then I moved into this position as the CPD officer.
So you two have been working together with the Health and Social Care Professionals Office on a professional supervision module. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I would have worked with Toothless released a member of their staff, Caroline Conley, to work with me. And we were asked by the National Health and Social Care Professionals Office to develop it. So we would have looked at what the core principles of supervision was and what, and we looked at, it was at that stage I worked with around the Toni Morrison model, which would have been used by Toothless. And we looked at, well, what are the core pieces just to introduce supervision? And it started out health and social care professionals, but just to introduce it to the health service and what it included. And that included the likes of a definition, contracting, what it would look like in real life. And we would have also had a couple of sample sessions for them to for people to view and to demonstrate using specific skills to effectively engage in supervision and how it could support their practice. Particularly in complex services.
For myself, as a CPD officer, our relationship with the Health and Social Care Professionals Office is that they fund the CPD officers' posts in a lot of professional bodies, and they fund some of our CPD events and conferences and workshops. So that's the relationship that we would have with the office. And then we did a collaborative project over 2 years over COVID. And we did an e-learning module around reflective practice during COVID. And this was a collaborative project, not only with Nuala, but also with other CPD coordinators, different professional bodies. Originally, a video was put together to support practitioners during COVID around reflective practice. And then Nuala, then you saw an opportunity there, wasn't that right?
Yes, they had... In 2019, there was a reflective practice statement, and similar to the supervision e-learning module, we wanted to build on it because reflective practice is a core piece of the supervision. So the professional network had already developed a program and we wanted to build on that even further. So then that was where the reflective practice e-learning program, all up on HSE land and all free once you're working in the health service, and certainly complements the supervision component of it too.
Okay, can I take you both back right to the beginning for anyone who's listening to this and doesn't understand what professional supervision is in social care? You've said there that you have, you know, you've used the Toni Morrison method, that you've put in definitions and you've identified the core principles of supervision. But like, if there's a student listening here or somebody who's not involved in social care, what is professional supervision?
Professional supervision is around a relationship. It's a working relationship that you have with another person, and that other person is mandated by their organisation. So really, it's part of their role. And it's, for me, one of the beauties is it's protected space for you to go and to bring your caseload and to bring, well, your what you've done well, as well as, actually, I'm not quite sure how this is working. So it's very much led by the relationship and strengths-based. And it allows a person bring, well, actually, that didn't go quite well, or it went really well, but I'm not sure how it went really well. And it allows that person to look at it and look, and reflect on it from different angles. It also, for me, it's a container for that reflection, but it's also a container for that working relationship that it's contracted for. It's recorded. So there's a formal process to it. And while there, you would have a supervision session within the meeting, and you would record it. The other piece is that supervision is happening outside of the supervision session. So there's ad hoc supervision or off the, and that could happen in a corridor, it could happen at a team meeting to say, can I have 5 minutes? And it's around, well, actually, it's a process. So it's not just the individual supervision sessions. And for me, that reflection piece is that as people settle into the supervision relationship, they start becoming more prepared to it because they have their own internal supervisor in their head saying, well, actually, I need to do a little bit of reflection and a little bit of preparation before I meet my supervisor. Because one of the challenges for supervision at the moment is time. And we're all said, oh, I'm time poor. So there's a little bit about, well, actually, by preparing it, then when you're given that hour or 90 minutes, you actually go in and you've already drilled down, well, this is the piece I want to put this under the spotlight and pack a little bit, or I need support in, or I'd like to look at it because I'm not quite sure for a variety of different reasons. And supervision also has around four functions. So you're looking at accountability, which is around like core, we're accountable for our practice, as well as the learning and development and supporting a person to do the job, as well as the engagement piece that they're engaging not just with their supervisor but also the team around them.
The benefits are that the communication is open, you're building a culture of trust, and that's a culture of learning. So any mistake is an opportunity to learn, because we work in an environment that can have a lot of conflict, there could be a lot of chaos, there could be a lot of change. Sometimes you don't know what's coming through the door. So you have to be prepared and feel that you're competent and you have those skills to do that job and do it well. But you give so much of yourself to social care, as you should. That's the nature of the job. But you also need it to be minded. You need somebody in your corner that values that, that you can talk to. So the benefits of supervision for me when I was in practice were enormous, and it kept me in the role that I felt validated, that the decisions and the relationship I had with the clients that I worked with had value, and that relationship was really important. And I was able to go to somebody in a safe way and talk about my practice and who I was and the values that I had and any emotions that I may have had around a certain individual or incident. And it just gave me 20 years of practice then. I was able to sustain those relationships. And I worked in residential care for 20 years, which, you know, you've long work in, long hours, sleepovers, you've all those other bits. So for me, it is fundamental that you have supervision, and that space is reflected on for both the supervisor and the supervisee.
And it also builds resilience in yourself as well, doesn't it? And at the end of the day, it's better for the service user. If you have resilient staff who are able to cope with what's happening, it's all the better for the service user, because the staff will stick around for longer, just like you did, Charlotte. And then they have the consistency of that.
And you can decompress then as well if you are triggered by something that's happened on your shift. You get that chance to decompress. And then just, because sometimes you can't go home. If something happens on shift, you have to dust yourself back down and you have to go back on the floor and get on with your practice. And that is really difficult. That's really challenging. But if you know that you can go to your supervisor at a later time and they will give you that space, that alone can make you kind of just go, okay, I will deal with this later and I'll continue with the job at hand. And that's what we need from social care workers, because it's a very challenging environment that we work in.
Absolutely.
And they need that respect. That's not always easy to do that.
Charlotte has done a beautiful job on that piece, and I'm going to bring it up another level. The supervisor, their responsibility is to make sure that the supervision is supporting their core registration, their CPD, also that it's in line with the likes of Sláinte Care and how, or the values of the organisation that a social care worker is working in. So I know within, I work in the HSE, and within that you've got the care, compassion, the trust and the learning. So for me, any of my practice, they're my benchmark. Well, actually, is my practice in line with those particular pieces? So it's even raising it above that, that it is about the individuals, and we've mentioned the supervisee, but there's also other people in the room, and they may not be physically in the room, but they're there in with the Mental Health Commission. You've got any policies and procedures, the supervision allows bringing those back. So from a standards perspective, supervision, then one of the benefits is it allows benchmark. Well, how are we doing off those? So that's one of the benefits then from the organizational point of view, that they're managed and we're compliant with those particular pieces, while at the same time supporting the supervisee in their practice.
Can I just add, like, when I started working in social care and youth work, supervision was something that put the fear of God into people. And I think it's developed hugely since, like, over 20 odd years since I've been doing it. But I think the skill of the people who are giving the supervision has also changed, because, as you say, there's a lot of ad hoc improvised supervision that goes on. And one thing that I'd like to point out that I really admired was that at conference, when the amount of young students that were there on the mentor program and the amount of professionals around the place who took time to sit and speak with the students, even though it wasn't full on professional, they saw that they had something to add and something to share. And I thought that was brilliant, and that people who obviously value sharing information and supervision were able to give the time to the young people there. I thought that was amazing. And I like to see that with students when they go on placement as well. Instead of just having the booklet and you're filling in the forms and you're signing for their hours and you're signing for all the bits of work that they're doing, that you take time to sit and have the cup of coffee or tea and have a chat about, like, how are you doing? Not the technical stuff. So I think it's moved on hugely since the horror word was mentioned when you start a new job.
And that's interesting, Dave, because when I was qualified and moved into the role, I looked at, well, supervision is mandatory, and that put the fear of God into me as well. And said, well, and I actually looked at, well, what will I be doing wrong? I wasn't even there and they were putting it in. So it is a piece that it is that, well, how do I want to engage in that supervision? And that's where the training for supervisors come in, and also the training for the supervisee to say, actually, this is a container to support you in your practice. And at the same time, also hold you account to your practice, so that we're working together. And I think the key bit is that relationship. And you should be having the social bit and the informal bit of having that cup of tea to get to know the person. Because how can we deal with issues if I actually don't know who you are and what you do and what how you tick and your motivation for doing this job?
But there's also the responsibility on line managers to make sure that, say, like, I supervise my team, I need to make sure that I get proper supervision from my line manager. He needs to make sure that he's getting appropriate supervision from their line manager. So the onus on us is to go up as well as make sure that the right supervision is going down as well. Do you think?
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think the difficulty is, as managers go up the line, it becomes more operational and the reflection piece of it. However, the beauty, I'm the national lead in the office for supervision. And one of the beauties is I have managers coming along to say, Nuala, I'm now in an operational role, but I don't want to lose the supervision. So I think, similar to your earlier comment, I think supervision has moved on. And I think people now are seeing the added value that it is. And particularly in the current climate, in the different services, the services are going through an awful lot of change in the community. So there's a lot of change. And for me, one of the things that grounds me is actually the supervision piece, to know that I have that protected time to just look at what I want. And naturally enough, the supervisor will come along and they'll say, oh, I need to be looking at X and Y because I'm doing it on behalf of the organisation. But that partnership and that relationship allows that discussion and to prioritise it. So it has moved on, and managers are now recognising it more and more. The key bit is actually the reflective piece. For me, it's that recognition, that added value that managers are now realising they're in an operational role, but how supervision and that reflective piece is key for them to see what they're doing well and what may not be going so well. Alan O'Neill's dual focus approach, that is like a balancing scales, and it's looking after the operational piece and around the job, what's expected of me to do, what standards I have to, like Coral. And then the other side of it is actually the individual, the development piece, and that is actually developing that person to be able to do the job. And it's around trying to find that balance, and sometimes that balance is out of kilter. And that might be, I'm a new graduate, so I'm focused on X and Y. But as they start developing their own skill set, it suddenly balances it out. And that's where supervision helps with that reflective piece, that it's not all about getting the job done. And supervision brings that it's a relationship to actually say, well, how are you doing today? And what do we need to focus on today? And yes, we have agendas, but actually let's see what is going on. Because if we deal with the issues as they come along, the pieces, then the job happens naturally for people, because they're clear of their role and their what's expected of them in that role and their practice.
And I'd like to add, just, you need a culture of learning, you need that environment that allows that space, because you need a safe space, don't you, to be psychologically safe, so that you can, you know, go through your thoughts and look at your emotions and see how you're feeling about something that may have happened. And that needs to be supported in a culture that is of learning for everybody, not only the line manager, but also the supervisor, as you were talking about there, David, as well. It's very important to have that reflection. It's cyclical, it's everywhere.
I supervise quite a few students on placement, and they get amazing supervision from their supervisors on placement. And then sometimes they go out into the world of work and supervision is non-existent. I also work with a lot of people in my private practice as an independent person who does professional supervision, who don't get supervision in the workplace, or who tell me that they get it, but it feels like a tick the box exercise. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a difficult one, because I think then the organisation is missing out on the opportunity of attracting people. I certainly know, being on interview boards, and even talking to the students, you mentioned about talking to students at the conference last week, that one of the things is they're asking about the robust supervision arrangements that are in place. And now there's an awful lot of opportunities out there for people to go and select which job they want to go into. And one of the ways an organisation and a manager can attract people in is saying, we have robust supervision arrangements in place. I think one of the challenges is people put it down to time, and they say, oh, we don't have time. And for me, that is invested time. When we were doing the reflective practice module, we used a TED talk by Dr. Sabrina Cohen-Hatton, a chief officer in the UK Fire Department. And she has done a PhD, and she looked at fire officers going into a building. And she has asked them to stop for about 3 or 4 seconds before they enter a building, just to help them assess. And supervision brings that pause into it to allow, actually, do I want to charge in here, or do I need to take a breath and a pause? And one of the things when people come back to me and says, oh, I don't have time, there's a piece about actually if a firefighter going into a burning building can actually say pause for 3 or 4 seconds, that can actually positively impact on their decision-making ability to manage a situation for their team and for also the people that they're trying to save, not to mention their own safety. And I think people now, and HSCPs and other healthcare professionals, as well as the social care profession, they are taking it on that actually this is a protected space, but the organisation needs to mind that. And who are the organisation? We are. So the individual supervisors need to prioritize it. I need to say, if I invest this time, I am placing value on this. I'm also placing value on this person. And then this person will feel valued. And for me, that's a win for attracting new people into the organization, as well as retaining those new people. And then they'll actually start feeling that valued and that investment that they'll start investing, because they'll start mirroring that piece of it for themselves. And they'll start saying, actually, this person is seeing a lot more potential in me that I actually didn't even need know about. And then now I actually can see that in somebody else. So for me, that starts just that sending out those ripples to other people, and people start looking at it at a strengths base as well as a development base. And for me, then when you go back to, and this is what we're here for, is actually around the service user, the patients, the clients, the family, the children, the youth that we're working with, the residents that we're working with. You're actually looking at it from that perspective to say, well, if I'm developing my practice, it has to have a positive effect. And I have a protected space to do it. So for me, there's a little bit when Charlotte and myself were preparing for this, there was a little bit about, actually, do you know what? You'd be mad not to be using supervision.
Yeah.
And it's actually now we have policies, we have guidelines there in place. And even Koru have them there. They're giving them the CPD points for it around, well, applying, what have you learned in the supervision? But there is a piece back to the reflection. We can do the reflection. But actually, what are we doing with that reflection? And that's where supervision brings it to life. And supervision has a conversation that now that you've noticed that tendency about yourself, now that you've noticed that why it's working well, how does that transfer onto other aspects of your practice? And how can we make that real? And what's the win for the different people and the different stakeholders, the organization, you as the individual supervisee, you as the individual supervisor, your operational manager? And the service user in there, where so that was wins all around. But sometimes I think in the fast pace of life, I find we miss out not noticing those wins or recognizing or naming those wins.
But isn't the taking the time for supervision is one of those times where it gives us the chance to put the care back into social care, because we're all caught up with the actual work we have to do, the physical things, the paper, the cleaning, the shopping, all those kind of things. And when you put that time aside to actually speak to your supervisee, you're able to reinforce that we are a care business. We do actually care. And this is one situation where I, as a supervisor, can reinforce how important you are to the team, to your clients, to the organization. And as you say, point out the positives that are probably not mentioned enough and not enough credit given to on a daily basis.
And I think that goes back. I love that around putting the care back into social care, because that goes back to Eileen O'Neill's June focus about the operation and all those tasks. But actually, there's a person doing those tasks. So what about that person? What skills do they have to offer? Because no two people offer the same skill set. And you're also looking at the knowledge base, the skill, the experience base that they're bringing. And even the study in social care, it varies from college to college. So and even their placements. So we're all bringing, and then the human being element of it, we're all bringing that. So we do need that caring piece in it, not just for the service user, but also for each one of us. And I look at the HSE, their values, and I look at care, compassion, and I look at trust and learning, and all of those principles come into supervision. So for me, that's why I say you're mad not to get involved in supervision. And the bit for me around supervision, when you are unpacking it and reflecting, you're actually saying, well, these are great words. Those values around the HSE are great words, but actually, how do they translate into how we work together as a team, how we practice together, how I actually engage with that service user? Am I caring with them? Am I compassionate with them? But actually, what does that look like? And for me, when I worked in training and development and I facilitated teams, and even when I had groups of managers in front of me, and we looked at, well, how does that, we broke it down in, what does that look like in their service around that compassion and actually walking the walk as well as talking the talk? Because the words can be brilliant and we all have got great documents to say, well, that's great guidelines and that, but actually, how does that translate? And the beauty of supervision is that it allows it to bring it into a protected space in a group setting or even in a one-to-one setting to translate it. Well, what does that look like for me? And what am I bringing to the table in relation to that? So I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, and just to say that, Neil, I think that's the relationships is core, isn't it?
It is.
The relationship you have with your service user, the young people you work with, the relationship you have with your team, the management. So it's holding that space, isn't it?
It is.
And saying that is very valuable as part of a team, to be able to adapt to that change and support each other and value that connection that you have. Because again, it's like a ripple effect, isn't it? When you know when the team gets on and they have really good relationships with each other and they can be honest and speak and be open with each other, you can feel that in the environment, can't you, in the place of work.
I remember one placement I had, and the supervision was a tick box exercise. And I remember looking at, well, what have I done to contribute to this? And looking at my role. And then I realized the reflection piece was, well, actually, that supervisor has shown me how not to do it. So now that I know how not to do it, what way do I do it now? And again, what does that look like? And sometimes those challenging moments for me, when I look back, if you're using your supervision history, and I look back on the different supervisors I had, and I look back, well, what went well and why did it go well? And then what didn't go so well and why did that? And sometimes we put it all onto the supervisor when actually, in fact, just exactly what Charlotte has said there, it's a relationship. So there's an interaction between two people. So how do we manage those particular pieces of it? And we're all contributing in some shape or form. So when you look at supervision, when we were developing we did the e-learning program for supervision and for reflective practice. And then we've now got a 4-day program for supervisors, face-to-face and online, as well as a 1-day supervisee program. And when we look at that, it's around the people reflecting around, are they open to their supervisor and that engagement? Are they open to that relationship? And particularly if they've been burnt in the past, there's a bit about, well, actually, the shutters are down. There's a little bit. And then supervisors will come along and say, they're a bit resistant. And my thoughts and questions I'd say to supervisors, why do you think that might be? And the supervision history will allow you even name it and recognize it. And then the piece of it is, well, now that I recognize that, what am I going to do with it? And then that sends that ripple effect into the future to say, this is how I want to change my practice. Because we can't keep staying with the shutters down. We have to open them up. But that psychological safety is also a core piece of it.
Absolutely. And I was just going to say, over my 20 years practice, I've had good, bad supervision. When it was really poor, that actually, I reflected on it and I ended up going back and doing more training and moving from that person. And then another person who was amazing and worked with a person who had a lot of behaviours that challenged. And I was quite young and naive and quite new to social care. But the way that she held a space for me that was safe, that I could talk through all my emotions if an incident had happened, and I could just put all of that and say it all. And then I suppose it allows your brain to kind of come in and start thinking about what happened. And then I suppose when I was being held in that space, it allowed me then to reflect on and look at the antecedents to somebody's behavior and what happened before that. Whereas straight after it, I was so overwhelmed with the incident, I just wanted to run away, and I just thought I was really bad at social care and it wasn't for me. But when I was held in a safe space by this particular supervisor and we went through all the emotions and how I was thinking about something, I actually ended up working in that house for years afterwards. So you're right, the more we mind each other and the more those relationships are built on trust and respect, and that space is protected that you can talk to somebody, the longer you're going to work in social care, isn't that for sure? That's for me, that's what happened for me anyway.
I love what you said there, Charlotte, about how, you know, it was a difficult situation to be in, difficult behaviours, and being new to social care as well. It can be very easy to feel like running away or packing it all in, giving up social care altogether and going to find a different career. I've been in that situation myself, and unfortunately I wasn't getting the supervision in that situation. And then, you know, I did work in an organisation where I had a much better space for discussing incidents and, you know, things that were happening. And I hear you, it absolutely makes the difference. when you support staff or when you feel supported after an incident, when you don't feel like you're being blamed for what happened, when you know that there's somebody you can go and talk to who understands exactly what you've been through. And that helps to build resilience in staff, doesn't it? So to have those really well-trained supervisors or mentors to do that with you, I think is really valuable.
This podcast is sponsored by Trust Social Care Consultancy. If you want to get in touch with Audrey, please go to www.trustconsultancy.ie. Now back to the podcast.
How do we get the message across to supervisors and managers that good quality supervision is of benefit for them? It's of benefit for them to take the time out of their day. They're very valuable time, I get that. But how do we get that message across to them? A hard question.
I'm looking at the stages of professional development. And within that, the stages of professional development, if you are a new manager, you're focusing on your role, and it goes back to Eileen O'Neill's balancing piece. It's around the task of getting the job done. So the development piece can get lost and the balancing piece can get lost. So for me, sometimes there's a bit about actually we need to value it and we need to prioritize it. But what does that actually look like? And valuing it and prioritizing it means we build in culturally, we build in this is the way we work. And the bit for me, when Charlotte was just talking there a few minutes ago, the bit for me was if supervision is going well and the relationship is going well, that will mirror out into your relationships, working relationships with your service user. So if this isn't working and has an impact then on the practice that we're and the interaction we are having with our service users, again, it goes back to that. You'd be mad not to do this. But I think sometimes we get lost in that time piece. And then it's not valued, and it's not valued from non-social care people or non-HSCPs. But I think there's a journey going on at the moment that those that are involved in it are reaping the rewards. However, sometimes we need to take a pause and we need to review it to say, well, we might be thinking we're great and we're giving ourselves a clap on the back, but actually, what evidence do we have in that, and we need to reflect on what part of that to see so that we can keep evolving it and it doesn't stay static.
Very good.
And can I jump in there just to put my CPD hat on as well? In the Code of Professional Conduct and Practice in section 27 is around engaging in supervision. And I think the power is in the social care worker to own that and to push back on services and demand that protected time on the roster, and to use it as a reflective space to see the benefit, like Nuala's talking about, not only for the individual, but also for the service. And I think it is a culture shift. And I think that's the pushback needs to come back from the individual, which is not easy. It's not an easy thing to do if you're a new grad, you're only starting somewhere. But I think the code is a lovely document that you can set it in and you can use that as the perimeters of what you're asking for. And I think going forward, we're going to see a lot of change around supervision and reflection.
And I'd even go back another step. I'd go back to students and I go back to the universities and colleges, them taking a proactive role in the supervision. And then when they've graduated, they come and they say, well, if you want me, this is my expectations. So to go in at the start with clear expectations and then decide I'm not working here if this isn't going to happen.
Well, I find that one of the beauties of good supervision is that the benefits are actually as much outside the supervision as they are in the room. Because if everybody is getting good supervision in a team and they're on a good level of understanding and a certain amount of happiness with their job, that it feeds into the job they do day to day, how they interact with their clients, families, their peers, you know, it gives a much better sense of general well-being rather than that just that hour or 90 minutes that you're having your conversation.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree, David. And that's why I call it the supervision process. So that allows all of that piece to do it, and it does have a ripple effect. I mentioned earlier around the stage of professional development and that new manager that's just focused on the task. If there's four stages of them, and if you go to the last to the last stage three and four, the manager can see the bigger picture and take a step back and can actually see how supervision adds value. So then we'll play a proactive role. So that's where the manager needs to understand what supervision is about and how it can add value as well, and the workings of it and the different components. So they're not just rocking up to that supervision session and just saying, well, it's just happening in, that they're actually, their practice is, it's across the practice and they're modeling it. And then exactly as David has described really well, is that it ripples out then to any interactions that they have with anybody else. So staff are mirroring that. So supervisors need to be a leader in this. Their supervisors need to be a leader in it as well. So this isn't just about the two individuals meeting for supervision in the session. This is actually nearly a community piece. And if we are all those parts come together, you cannot but win with a capital W-I-N.
Very good. Tell us about the course on hseland.ie.
It's an introduction to professional supervision, and it provides you with one Toni Morrison's definition, and then it gives you the four functions. So it starts telling you the story about supervision, because people think supervision is a new phenomenon, but it's been going back a number of years at this stage. And then it gives you the core components, like the how to report. It also gives you the contract. It also asks you to reflect on your supervision. So it starts building in an effective, what effective supervision looks like. So it starts the building blocks of how to engage in the supervision. And it can be done by the supervisee and the supervisor. So it gets them thinking about, well, so that both of them are on the same page in relation to supervision.
Then as well, we have an e-learning module on reflective practice. The first module is an introduction to reflective practice, and the second module is for more experienced practitioners. There's loads of resources in there. And again, they're interconnected, supervision, reflective practice. They're nearly the same, they're on par with each other. The two go hand in hand. So there's loads of resources in there. If you are having difficult supervision, or you're meeting some blocks, roadblocks, it's a great way of reflecting on where are you, what are you bringing to the supervision? Is it negative? Is it positive? And like we've talked about it from our own experience, that helps you then to do something about it rather than just putting up with it.
I'm all about the practicalities. How many courses are there? How long do they take? Is it free? Who can do them?
They're all free. They're all in HSE land.
It's www.hseland.ie. You can register up there. We would encourage students to register up there. There is hundreds of courses up there. The two that I, if I was a student and I was starting off, I would use these two even as in college, because it gives you the components of what reflective practice is. There's frameworks up there, and then also supervision and what's in there, giving you the definition and the parameters of that and what can you expect. And equally, it looks at the skill set that you need. So it's, and you get a certificate at the end, so you can include it when you're applying for jobs. But it certainly gives you a sense of what it's about. So it does cover what supervision is. It also covers why you would do reflective practice, or why you would do supervision, and how it's going to support you. And then that reflective piece, what an effective supervisor looks like. Because for me, over the years, sometimes I've had a brilliant supervisor, but I haven't recognized it. So in the e-learning program on supervision, it starts highlighting, there's about six core skills that we're saying, and then when people go into the classroom program, they can actually then start building on that and practice the skills. And the other piece is, we have two flyers on both of them, so maybe we'll include those at the end as resources, because there's loads of resources up on HSE land, but the two flyers will be able to signpost where people can go, if that's helpful.
Okay, so anyone can go into hseland.ie and do the modules on reflective practice and professional supervision, yeah. And is there additional training available for supervisors and managers?
There is. There's face-to-face training. So the supervisor is in the four-day program, and that builds on the e-learning program. Again, we looked at the core skills a supervisor needs. And because the office, it's targeting health and social care professions, which social care is one of them. So it looks at the generic skill set.
In social care, I'll be running some reflective practice workshops in person over the next few months. And that will be up on the webpage, Social Care Ireland webpage.
Do you have to be a member for that?
No, it won't be. No, and it'll be free, and that'll get us ready then for registration in November and get people to understand all around the process of what CPD means when it comes to Cóiriú.
The other bit I'd say, when Charlotte and myself were preparing for this, I came up with the analogy of a car, and the car with all the working wheels and all the seats in it. And it was around when you're doing some reflection, well, where are you in your supervision? Where are you in your registration as a social care professional? Are you in the driving seat? And what does that look like? Or are you in the passenger and you're just following along? Or are you actually in the back seat? So then am I getting people to do things onto me rather than being active? And then in some cases, are you actually in the boot and hiding from registration and hiding from supervision? So it's getting people to think, well, actually, where am I at right now? And then the supervision works with all four wheels. But if we're focusing on one function, there's four functions. If we're focusing on a narrow definition of supervision, that means that the wobbly wheel or a wheel has gone off. We can't drive a car with that. And if I'm driving, do I have the skill set to drive? And supervision is a way of finding out, well, what skill set do I have from a strengths-based. And if I don't have the skill set, it's not about, oh, tut, tut, that's terrible. So you graduated, what did you come out with when you had that qualification? There's a bit about that's the learning, that's the stretch for the person. So for me, the driving is a very good way of getting people to think about, well, where am I in that car? And what does that look like? And literally looking around, well, actually, what does that look like for my practice? And getting people to think about it. And then if I'm in supervision, are we focusing on all the core pieces? Do we have a clear definition, a clear understanding what supervision is? Are we focusing on the four functions? And for me, when I do the training with managers and with supervisors, I'd say to them, it's as important to look at what we're focusing on as well as what we're not focusing on. And what we're not focusing on, sometimes there's avoidance there, and there's a piece about how do we manage that piece. So sometimes we have to move the spotlight to say, we're doing really well on those, but actually this one over here is hiding in the corner, and we're very happy to it's like the elephant in the room, we're quite happy for it to be there.
The blind spot there.
So being clear about what supervision is about, and that's where the training helps unpack that openness to actually engaging in that supervision working relationship. It's a partnership. So a partnership is both people need to come to the table so that all the wheels are on tight and I'm sitting in the driving seat. Or I might be sitting in the passenger seat with a very clear purpose. But actually, if I'm driving my career forward, I need to be in the driving seat in the role that I'm in. And what does that look like?
Very good. Nuala, could you tell us what the four functions of supervision are?
Yes, the first one is the accountability stroke management, and that's where we're accountable for our practice. There's an expectation that you're working within your scope of practice, you're doing your job that is within your job spec, and you're following the policies and procedures. So there's that accountability there from the organisational point of view as well as from the individual. The other one is learning and development. So that's space for mistakes to be made, but at the same time, learning for those and how they can actually move on. And equally, that development piece that we all, it's every day is a school day. So there's a piece about, but I'm not starting off at zero. As adults and as a new graduate or an experienced person, I'm bringing that to the table. So I have specific development needs in line with either personal goals, development goals, but in this case, it would be work-related goals. Then you're looking at support, and the support is for the person to do the job. So that's actually, this person is bringing X and Y skills to do that, but actually we need an additional skill here. So then how am I going to support this person to develop that skill? No organization or supervisor should be expecting a supervisee to know everything, because for me, even the things I know now, I look at them differently through a different lens at different parts throughout my career. And then the other one is around engagement and mediation and the communication. And similar to what Charlotte mentioned earlier around that team piece, when I'm working on a case, I'm not working on it in isolation to anybody else. I need to be linking in with my supervisor. I need to be linking in with service users. And in the past, when I worked in social care, I would have worked with Bernardo's, I would have worked with schools, I would have worked with the parents, I would have worked with nursing, and speech and language I would have worked with. So the role of a social care worker brings you into touch with an awful lot of other services. So our supervision should be bringing those into there to say, well, actually, where are they? And for me, one of the things my learning was sometimes we were duplicating some of our work, whereas if we open that engagement and encouragement with those, sometimes then it was very clear who's doing what and who needs to take a step back. But we still need to have oversight of that piece of work happening. And then that's making the limited resources available, using them much more smartly.
Well, perfect. I think that was a long and interesting discussion. And I I mean that in a very positive way. I find it educational, because I'm relatively new to supervision myself as a supervisor, 5 or 6 years, but it's still really new to me. And I find that every time that I am in a session with one of my team, it's very different. But as I say, I do find that what goes on outside the supervision is affected largely by what goes on inside. So the fact that you're pushing this so hard is really positive, because I think there's a lot of people out there who don't understand it in a positive view. And as going back to the start, we were saying it used to be a horror word. And I think you're taking a lot of that uncomfortable feeling out of speaking about supervision, even outside the supervision room session. You know, it's been spoken about freely. So I'd like to thank Nuala and Charlotte for joining us, and Audrey. I think it was a fabulous discussion. Yeah,
absolutely.
So you're very welcome.
For anyone who wants to find out more, go to hseland.ie. Do the courses. They only take a few hours. They're free. You can sign up for a free account, and they are very, very beneficial, whether you are working frontline or a supervisor. So we really hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Join us next time as we chat with more interesting guests and share their stories from the social care world. Take care.